wake up, put your shoes on, take a breath of the northern air, and rub those eyes.
It is the morning of February 18th. This is Jeff Diamond's Vikings and NFL Insider, part of the TalkNorth.com podcast network. Thanks to our sponsors, White Bear Lake Superstore, longtime sponsors. We do appreciate them sponsoring the program. Jeff, let's start here. We are now in mock draft season. Of course, we're never not in mock draft season, but now we're in the part of mock draft season where people are really starting to get interested. And there have been mock drafts that have the Vikings with two excellent receivers taking another receiver. Jeff, of course, former Vikings general manager, former NFL executive of the year. What do you think of that concept, Jeff?
Well, the mock draft season is really kind of a crazy year, time of year, of course, as we all know. And you're going to see all kinds of out-of-the-box and crazy mocks and different ideas for who the Vikings would take and who different teams would take and where these quarterbacks, such as Trevor Lawrence, are going to go, which we know he's going to Jacksonville, but where the rest of the guys are going to go. And but, yeah, I was very amused by the mock that had the Vikings taking Devontae Smith with their 14th pick, which, first of all, I don't know that he's going to get that far, especially after that national championship game for Alabama when he had, 200 yards receiving in the first half before he got hurt. And I think the difference and the reason the Vikings will not take a wide receiver in the first round, it sounds great to have Devontae Smith, Adam Thielen, and Justin Jefferson as a trio, which is comparable, it seems, to what we had in 1998 when we did draft Randy Moss, and we already had two 1,000-yard receivers in Chris Carter and Jake Reed. And really going to that draft, thought, well, we don't need a wide receiver. We need help on defense. And I think the difference in that particular year, first of all, Randy Moss was clearly a top-five talent player, which perhaps Devontae Smith is too. But I think the big difference is the type of offense we ran in 1998 with Brian Bilk as the coordinator. It was a more wide open offense. It wasn't as run centric, even though we had Robert Smith as an excellent Pro Bowl caliber back and a great offensive line, but we were still a much more diverse offense in terms of not being focused on running the ball as Zimmer is and as Quinn Kubiak, the new coordinator, is going to be with Dalvin Cook in the lineup, who is one of the top three backs in the league. And so I think that's the difference. We didn't run as many two tight end offenses compared to what they have today in the Vikings base offense. And the Vikings have two very good and fast improving tight ends in Irv Smith Jr. and Tyler Conklin. And even without Kyle Rudolph, that's going to be the base offense with two wide receivers in Thielen and Jefferson. And I still like B.C. Johnson and Chad Beebe as a third and fourth wide out. And I could see them drafting a wide receiver later, as they usually do. But I don't think it's going to happen in the first couple of rounds when they need a guard to replace Dakota Dozier. They need a defensive tackle who can rush the passer and stop the run. And a guy like Christian Barmore from Alabama would look great on that Vikings defensive line. They need another cornerback, perhaps, if they have to move on eventually from Mike Hughes, who just can't stay healthy. And they need perhaps a young rising offensive tackle to step in eventually if they don't like how their young guys are developing. And perhaps a young quarterback to groom is not a bad idea. So there's plenty of draft needs for the Vikings, and I don't see a wide receiver in the first round in the cards, especially with the offense that they run.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of those things that gains popularity on the internet so quickly because people like bright, shiny objects. And, hey, if you can get a great wide receiver and add him to this offense, wouldn't that be great? But it doesn't solve the offensive line problem. And as you said, Zimmer dictates what kind of offense is run by the Minnesota Vikings. He wants an offense that runs the ball well, protects the quarterback well, and makes the game easy for Kirk Cousins. And that is the two tight end offense with two talented young receivers that they can run bootlegs to, they can throw underneath to, they can get things rolling early in the game, they can get matchup advantages with their tight ends. And the three wide receiver is really more for your Peyton Manning spread it out and make the defense pay kind of offense. That's not this offense.
No, or unless you're in third and long, and then right. perhaps you do bring that in. But you don't want your first round pick to be a guy who's playing 30% of the downs. You want him to right. be a 60-80% guy. And that's what the tight ends are doing. That's what Smith and Conklin are playing, 60-80% or more, especially when Rudolph is let go in the near future. And that's going to be in the cards very soon, as we've seen, as we've heard the chatter about, and as Kyle even himself has kind of alluded to.
Yes, exactly. You can find all the shows as they are released by following us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod, or you can simply go to TalkNorth.com to find all the shows. Pretty much every sport covered. Also, plenty of outdoor content through Ron Scherer's productions. Wherever you listen to us, rate us, rip us, rave about us, do whatever you like. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. So it sounds like the NFL teams have been told that the salary cap will be at least $180 million and might be as high as $185 or $190. How do you view that news in light of what the Vikings are going to have to do this offseason?
Well, I think that's good news for the Vikings and for probably 20 or so teams that are right up against the potential cap of 185 to 190. And I think for the Vikings, their commitments are around that 185 level, but that doesn't include a guy like Anthony Harris, who they're going to have to make a decision on him, and on Eric Wilson, perhaps, what they're going to do with him. And that will partially depend on if they want to bring Anthony Barr back. And so I think it's good news for the Vikings that they're not quite up against it. And perhaps they will feel, well, maybe we don't have to extend Kirk Cousins again and reduce his cap number this year, because then next year his cap number, his dead money drops significantly, I think, to something around $10 million next year. But if they do another extension with him, or restructure, then that dead money is going to be much more significant next year. Now, if they're convinced that he's going to be their guy for the next 4 or 5 years, then no big deal. Then sure, if you free up the money that way. But I think in a lot of respects, perhaps trying to get the money elsewhere from Rudolph, whether it's $5 million there or Barr $7 million there, there are other ways to free up that money and try to figure that out. So we'll see what happens. But I certainly won't be surprised if they do another extension with Cousins get another 1 year extension, and again free up another $10 million under the cap if they feel like they need to do that. But and it'd be worth it if they can find a free agent guard who can step in and play. And they kind of missed the boat on that a couple of years ago when Roger Saffold was available, and they could have signed him. And when he was leaving the Rams, and instead he went down to Tennessee and has been a really excellent player for them, he could have fit in great on that offensive line here. So, yeah, I think it's good news that the cap is not going to go down as far, and certainly working in the agent business makes us very happy that there'll be more money available, because we've got a lot of players that we want to get signed to extensions and or potential free agents out there.
We continue to expand TalkNorth.com. If you'd like to advertise with this show or the network, you can reach Karen Cleary, the former Twins executive, at K-C-L-E-A-R-Y at TalkNorth.com. I want to thank our longtime sponsors, White Bear Lake Superstore. You can find all their inventory, all their deals at WhiteBearLakeSuperstore.com.
Yeah, Jim, always happy to talk about the White Bear Lake Superstore, Buick GMC, and my great friend, the owner, Paul Rubin, his general manager, Charlie Guttrell, their great staff, are Minnesota's number one volume Buick GMC dealer, 6 years running with the best selection and with their super friendly premium team. They've got a fantastic website. Go to WhiteBearLakeSuperstore.com and you'll see great pricing on the first ever Buick Encore GX, stylish and nimble. There's a great lease deal for $299 per month on the Buick Encore GX, plus 0% financing for 72 months on 2021 GMC Sierra HD Denalis, and $10,000 off MSRP on 2020 Buick Envisions with 0% financing for 72 months. That's the White Bear Lake Superstore.com. And the White Bear Lake Superstore also is the Quigley 4x4 Van Superstore. And only 7% of GM dealers make the cut, which the White Bear Lake Superstore Buick GMC does. And visit in person at 3900 Highway 61 North in White Bear Lake, or online at WhiteBearLakeSuperstore.com. They're a certified elite dealer, as I said, and you'll get all your vehicle needs and the premium experience Buick GMC, we are professional grade. You can shop pre-owned specials on one lot, thousands in savings. The White Bear Lake Superstore, Buick GMC.
Jeff has an interesting possible name to keep an eye on in free agency. Jeff, I'll let you unveil the plan.
Here's my out-of-the-box free agent signing for the Vikings. It looks like Richard Sherman, I think he's a 9-time Pro Bowler, 5-time first-team All-Pro. It looks like he's going to be released by the 49ers. He's intimated that recently that he's gotten the indication he's going to be let go. And I think Richard Sherman is a really interesting guy. I haven't always loved his bombacity when he likes to speak his opinions, which is okay. But I think he's an interesting guy. He'll be turning 33 years old next month. He was a Pro Bowler as recently as 2019 when the 49ers went to the Super Bowl. Now, last year, he had a calf injury that cost him 11 games. He had an Achilles in 2017 that cost him 7 games, but he's been very durable other than that. And I think that there could be a really good potential fit to bring in a veteran guy like Richard Sherman to help with tutoring the young guys in that secondary group, the Dantzlers and the Gladneys and the Chris Boyds. And I'm just not convinced that Mike Hughes is ever going to be a long-term player for this team. He just can't stay healthy. I think he seems to be a talented guy when he's had opportunities, when he stayed healthy. But if you can't count on him, it's as Bud Grant used to say, durability is the number one asset, and he has not had that. Now, sometimes players, and we'd had this with Robert Smith early in his career, a bunch of injuries, as you know, Jim, and he overcame them, became a great, great player. But he's just not built real stout. And then you add the problem of no off-season workout program in person for the last 2 years. And I don't care what you say about guys doing workouts at home in their home gyms or whatever. It's just not the same as being in that weight room, that beautiful weight room over at TCO Performance Center for the Vikings. So Richard Sherman, to me, is an interesting guy. He's coming off a $9 million salary in San Francisco. If you can get him to come in for, say, $4 to $5 million, plus a big incentive deal, and he could be a third corner for you and also be a great mentor for these young guys, I think it would be worth it. And let's just think back to last year when they had to put guys like Chris Jones in the lineup, who was just so shaky and hurt them so much in a bunch of those games, that if you can have Richard Sherman out there instead of Chris Jones, I'd take that in a heartbeat.
And Richard Sherman would be great tutoring the young players. You know, sometimes that's overrated. Sometimes the veteran player brought in to tutor people, it doesn't work out because you have to play at a high level and you have to have a great rapport with those players. But I think Sherman would be good at that. He's such a smart player. He's always been such a smart player. He's also capable of being a physical player. Who knows when he's going to drop off, but I am absolutely in favor of Richard Sherman coming here. I find him to be a fascinating guy on top of everything else. Let's talk about another veteran player.
Jim, I think you'd get I think you get several good columns out of him.
Yes, only about two a week. Yes, he'd be great.
Right.
Let's talk about another veteran player who could be on the move. Carson Wentz is still on the trading block, but it's a tricky deal because the Eagles have to take a huge salary cap hit to move him. And so they're not going to trade him just to trade him. They're going to want to get something in return for him, something worthwhile in return for him. And the team trading for him isn't going to want to trade for somebody they hope to be their starting quarterback unless he wants to be there. Nobody wants to trade for somebody who's going to be disgruntled on day one. So while there's been a rumor out there the Bears could trade for Carson Wentz, the rumors are that Carson Wentz really doesn't want to go to the Bears. How do you see all this being resolved?
Yeah, I think a good possibility is still in Indianapolis with Frank Reich, who Carson Wentz had his best year when Reich was the offensive coordinator in Philadelphia. And I could see that could be a fit, and perhaps he could do a reclamation project with Wentz, who still has some talent, there's no doubt, and just the Philadelphia situation unraveled for him. I think Chicago would be a tough spot for him. There's just so much pressure and so many – I think so much of the feedback would be, oh, he's just another Trubisky, and why are we giving up a first-round pick for him, which is probably going to be the minimal cost that the Eagles are going to look for, is at least a first-rounder, especially if the guy's going to be your starting quarterback. And for Indianapolis, who's a playoff team, it's a down-the-line first rounder. It's in the 20s. So you're not trading a top 10 pick for Wentz. And so I could see something like that occurring. And then the Eagles take that $20 million salary cap hit. But it's just such a negative situation for him there. And I think Indianapolis, he'd go to a team with a great offensive line, a good running game, some talented receivers. And I think that could be a really good fit for him. And just Frank Reich could rebuild him. So that's what makes the most sense to me in that situation.
Reminder, across the TalkNorth.com platform, we have a deal with Manscaped, male grooming. I've used it myself. It's the Lawnmower 3.0. Use the code ATHLETIC, all caps ATHLETIC, to get 20% off and free shipping. I highly recommend it. I use it every week, and I love it. So this time of the year, in a pandemic, how is scouting working, and will scouts miss things? Will they miss good prospects? Will this be a more random draft because of the current conditions?
Well, I think that they're used to it from last year. It's really the exact same situation in that they're not going to be allowed to bring players into their facility. Although the difference this year compared to last year there was a combine in Indianapolis in late February before the pandemic hit full force. So at least they got to see these players at the combine, even though the top players never work out there. But they got that. And supposedly they're going to have pro days, whether they're virtual or how they're going to do it on campus. And the scouts will be tuning in by video. I don't know how that all is going to work. And we're still trying to sort through that at IFA with Rashad Bateman, for example, on what's going to happen with his pro day at Minnesota and who how we're going to. He's been training out in Arizona and how that all works and a couple of our other rookies. So, yeah, I don't think it's that much different than last year. But I do think that it does create a situation where the best scouts will do the best job. And I think it's a benefit for teams that have these really top scouts that can identify talent. And so we'll see how it shakes out. But it's going to be tough for another year and also tough on the players, on the rookies, that they can't get in front of all these scouts as often as they could in the past. And so what it then kind of boils down to, and really what I always would tell our scouts in the draft room anyway, in our pre-draft meetings, is let's focus more on how a guy played in college. We've got tape on him. We've got video on him. Let's study the tape and deal less with the 40 time and how much he's bench pressing and all this and that, although that's still important and supplemental information. But the most important thing is still, how does a player play? And I just think I would always use the example of a guy like Anthony Carter and Chris Carter, guys who ran 4.5 to 4.6. But when the ball was in the air, they made the catches, they got open, they ran great routes. And I think that's the most important thing still. How does the guy play?
Yeah, and I've talked to scouts and general managers in all sports for a long time now, and I find kind of the best conventional wisdom on that in that regard to be you have to have certain minimum measurables. You can't be like an offensive lineman and not be able to bench press 200 pounds. You can't be a wide receiver and not be able to break 4.8. You know, but once you get to a certain level with your measurables, then it becomes how do you play within the game and how do you react? You know, it's like Jerry Rice was not that fast in a straight line in a 40-yard dash, but nobody ever caught him. You know, so there is something magic about good players and the way they play on a field.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think we saw that last year with Tyler Johnson to a certain extent, that because there was a lot of the pro days were canceled and they never really could get a time on him. And we knew he was basically a 4.5 guy, but he fell to the fifth round, even though he had a great college career, had a 200 plus yard game in the Outback Bowl against Auburn, an SEC team. And we were hoping he could be a second, third, fourth round pick. He falls to the fifth round. It's worked out okay, because he ends up with a Super Bowl ring in Tampa right. Bay, but I think he was a much better pick than a fifth round guy. And I think in the final analysis, he'll probably end up starting for Tampa Bay someday. And I think he could get a lot more playtime next year, depending on what happens with Antonio Brown's situation down there. And so, but I think he's a good example of sometimes you do need to have a little bit of that supplemental information to get that baseline, as you said, so you know what you're dealing with. But other than that, yeah, check the tape and see how they played.
We'll be talking about this next subject for a while, but I wanted to get into, I think Eric Edholm of Yahoo had a conversation with June Jones about the current quarterback class, and he said that he thinks he would rank Trevor Lawrence third on his list behind Zach Wilson and even Mac Jones, and he thinks Mac Jones is the best at throwing the ball downfield accurately, that Trevor Lawrence is a great athlete and a productive quarterback, but he sees him being a little bit off on long throws. Do you have any thoughts on this current quarterback class? And do you think there's any chance we see some surprises up high?
Yeah, I don't think we'll see a surprise at number one. I think Trevor Lawrence is still physically almost 6'6 and whatever, 230 or 250. He's just and so athletic. And yeah, I've seen enough of him winning national championships and going against really top teams and top defenses such as Alabama to know that he can be productive and make plays. And he still to me is the number one guy. But yeah, Wilson's interesting. Mac Jones is interesting. Doesn't have quite the mobility that these other guys have. Justin Fields had kind of an up and down season last year, but came on towards the end. And so, yeah, I think all four of those guys are clearly going to be first round picks and probably top 10 to top 15 picks, and how they fall, we'll see. But it just seems like it's going to be Lawrence, then Wilson, and then still I think Fields and Mac Jones in the mix there for that third quarterback spot. But Mac Jones, yeah, he's very impressive and smart, and I think he's a guy that is going to be a good professional quarterback.
Let's get a final thought from Jeff. Reminder, we also have the Viking Update Show. That's my weekly conversation with John Krasinski, the writer's point of view on the Vikings and the NFL. We have Cheryl Reeve, Royce Smalley, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, John Millay on preps. We have the Gopher Hole content, we have all the outdoor content, all under the TalkNorth.com banner. Thanks to everyone who listens. Again, wherever you listen, rave, rate, rip. Just let us know how we're doing. We do appreciate it. Let's get a final thought from Jeff Diamond on, as we conclude, another Jeff Diamond's Vikings and NFL Insider.
Yeah, I think what's interesting to me, and we can talk next week more about where the salary cap is, because I think that number is going to come out probably in the next week to 10 days, where it's going to fall. And then we can project how that affects, as we said, guys like Barr and Reif and Anthony Harris and Kyle Rudolph and so forth. Another guy that I think is interesting, and I also want to talk next week about the new TV deals that are rumored, but I think another interesting potential cut to save some cap room for the Vikings could be Dan Bailey. And hasn't been a lot of chatter about him lately, but there was this kind of under-the-radar signing where the Vikings signed Greg Joseph, who has some experience with the Titans and the Bucks, and younger guy, 26 years old, and in his career, he's 17 of 20 on field goal attempts, 34 of 38 on PATs, 53 touchbacks out of 80 career kickoffs. Those are good numbers. And Bailey, I could see them maybe bringing him to camp and competing with Joseph, but they can save $1.7 million under the cap if they were to release Dan Bailey this year. And he missed 13 kicks last year. So really, is that worth what they were paying him? No. So he's going to have to really convince Zimmer and the new special teams coach that he can do the job, or Greg Joseph is going to replace him. They're going to save some money there.
Interesting. Okay, good. We'll get more into that next week. Thanks to Jeff. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.